regular city council meeting of October 4th. And please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We could have the roll call, please, Madam Secretary.
Mayor Connell.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Easton.
Here.
Councilmember Aceves.
Here.
Councilmember Bennett.
Here.
Councilmember Perotti.
Here.
Do we have any speakers on the public forum?
We have no speaker slips.
Thank you. Are there any amendments or adjustments to the agenda, Mr. Singer?
No.
No? Okay. So let's move to A1. Madam Clerk.
A1, Oath of Allegiance, Muhammad Hill, Assistant City Attorney.
Want to say a few words?
Mayor, members of the council, before Deborah administers the oath, I wanted to give this an opportunity to introduce to you Mo Hill and to the public. This will be his first opportunity. He's been working with us for about a week now. Mo has worked with two other cities prior to coming to the city of Goleta. He worked with the city of San Jose and was assistant city attorney for the city of Alameda. He was assigned to work with the planning department there. He was the planning attorney for the city of Alameda. He has a broad base of experience planning, public works, housing, public safety, and code enforcement. So he's really going to be able to give us a lot of relief in a lot of different areas, be able to fit into to a lot of different functions that we need. Mo went to school at Berkeley, and he got his law degree at the University of Virginia. And you know, from a, I know you all appreciate the level of school that Berkeley is, and being familiar with that. From the legal profession, University of Virginia is one of the top schools in the country as well. We know already that he has outstanding credentials, has a broad base of experience. He's going to be able to fit in really well. But even more than that, just his quiet demeanor and approach and reasoned logic as he interacts with staff, I think is a welcome addition to the city attorney's office and to the city staff in total.
Can I ask you to raise your right hand? State your name.
Muhammad Hill.
Do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
I do.
Mr. Hill?
Thank you.
We appreciate your joining our city staff, and we look forward to working with you on all kinds of different things.
I do as well. I've really enjoyed getting to know the community, and obviously there's a lot for me to learn, and I'm really impressed by council and city staff's desire and really their focus on really doing what's best for the city, and I hope to add to that and be a definite part of that. So thank you very much. This is very meaningful to me.
Thank you, and again, welcome. Okay, if we could then move to A2.
Item A2, proclamation acknowledging the California State Lands Commission for service to the citizens of Goleta.
Mr. Singer?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to just say a few introductory remarks, and then we'll ask Mr. Chase to come up and say a few things. We've got some visuals that our planning staff has put together. So prior to you awarding the proclamations that you have, we'd like to set some context. Let me just start by saying today is certainly a big day for Goleta. We have not only some significant folks in the audience that have come from faraway places, as significant is the reason that they're here. And it's to celebrate really the success of something that the city of Goleta has focused on since incorporation. You know, in fact, when I first took the job 6 years ago, I remember one of the council members giving me a tour of the Elwood area and the bluffs, pointing to all of these relic pieces of armor and revetments and piping and all sorts of things that we over time have seen photos of from various citizens saying, one day it's a dream to see these things removed. And so here we find ourselves a substantial step in that direction. And to describe more of that, I'll have Mr. Chase give some details of that.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, members of the council. I can remember going back into the late 1960s, early 1970s, the number of hazards that were out on Haskell's Beach, surfing that beach hundreds of times and landing on some of the H piles. We have an opportunity to really pick up after what a former generation simply had left behind. But that opportunity isn't just localized for Goleta, it's throughout the state of California. It is unbelievable the number of demands that come across the State Lands Commission desk on a day-in, day-out basis, be it here, be it in the Kern River field or wherever it is, be it on La Cienega Boulevard even sometimes, where you have state property as a property manager to pick up after it. We had some opportunities in the early part of the last decade to get after picking up the steel beams on Haskell's Beach. Unfortunately, the financing fell apart. Somehow, Marina and Madhu and others have found dollars to go at it again, working with a variety of agencies, Coastal Commission, the city, the county. They got equipment on the beach. They removed far more than we had anticipated could be removed. We have a lot left to go, but they did one heck of a good job of getting old, outdated industrial material off that beach. This is our opportunity to say thanks to them and our opportunity to say, let's do it again. We have more to do. So maybe with that, let's invite Marina Vosconian up here, and we'll let you talk a little bit and maybe introduce some of your key players.
This is Marina Vosconian. I'm Assistant Division Chief with Mineral Resources Management Division of State Lands Commission. And with me, we have our Senior Structure Engineer, Madhu Ahuja, and Larry Philippe, that our Supervisor for Inspection Group in Goleta. And they're both very instrumental on accomplishing this successful task. And especially Madhu has been after the different fundings and was able to, with our management support, to get the funding from federal government. And we're very pleased. And meantime, I would also like to thank the staff and the City of Goleta, of the City of Goleta, for their continuous support and cooperation in allowing us to remove this public safety hazard along the Goleta coast. And I really appreciate that. And State Lands Commission is very proud to receive the proclamation. And thank you again.
Okay, so now I'm just trying to get the order right here. So I'm very pleased to read this proclamation from the City of Goleta. I know there are many, many people going down to Haskell's Beach who are going to really be grateful for what you've done. It runs, whereas Elwood Beach and Haskell's Beach were once the site of extensive oil and gas production, and whereas the California State Lands Commission received notice that the governor of California released funds and authorized implementation of the beach hazards removal project, and whereas the California State Lands Commission sought and obtained all necessary permits and utilized state funds to remove several types of hazardous structures, including piles, sheet piling, H-piles, well casings, and abandoned pipeline from Elwood Beach and Haskell's Beach, and whereas the California State Lands Commission completed authorized work along the City of Goleta coastline with the intention of returning to the region, including the City of Goleta, to further remove additional beach hazards. Now, therefore, be it resolved that on this fourth day of October, 2011, the City Council of the City of Goleta does hereby proclaim its appreciation of the California State Lands Commission and its employees for protecting the environment and citizens of Goleta through implementation of the Beach Hazards Removal Project, thus ensuring the health, safety, comfort, and quality of life of Goleta residents and visitors. So.
Okay, if we're prepared to talk about the wonderful work of the Division of Oil and Gas and Geothermal Resources, do we need to introduce anything?
I can read the item. A3, proclamation acknowledging the California Department of Conservation, Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources for service to the citizens of Goleta.
One of the roles that the state of California plays is oftentimes to get ahead of a variety of incidents that will occur. And oil wells do spring leaks over time, even when you think they've all been shut in. There's an agency that has among its many duties couple of things. One, when they do spring a leak, to get right after it immediately. The second is to try to prevent old wells from springing leaks, because obviously they pose hazards and they pose risks to the environment and to people. The Division of Oil and Gas Geothermal Resources I became acquainted with when I had an opportunity to work with the County Energy Division in the early 2000s, and at that point in time they were involved with many, many wells at El Capitan Ranch dealing with, if you will, a minefield of oil wells there. They did so in a very economic and efficient manner. And based on that experience, they were a natural pat at coming on to our Elwood Mesa and the Sperling Preserve that the city is involved with and assisting the city's efforts along with our geotechnical consultant, Steve Campbell. In that vein, while the city had responsibility for addressing the removal of water wells, some geoprobe wells, the real heavy lifting was to get rid of and properly close some old wells that did pose risk to us. They were able to do it in an extremely economic manner, but probably more important to our interests was they were able to do it in an environmentally safe and sound manner with almost no disruption to the recreationalists that are out there on a daily basis. This was a massive undertaking made to look quite simple. I don't know how else to describe it. Maybe I can let Conservation Acting Director Derek Chernow and Ms. Pat Abel explain a little bit more on this. So with that, Derek.
Thank you very much. I'm Derek Chernow, the Acting Director for the State Department of Conservation. And it was great to partner with the city with Dan Nemechek and city staff and the consultant on these three wells and help remove and properly plug and abandon these public health and safety issues. So it was a real pleasure for us. Three folks I'd like to single out at the Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources within our department. State Oil and Gas Supervisor Elena Miller, who's in Sacramento today, our District Director Pat Abel, and Jeremiah Hill, who oversaw the work on behalf of the department and Dogger. So we really appreciate it. We appreciate the partnership with the city, and hopefully we have a chance to do it again sometime in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and we also have a proclamation. I just wanted to say one thing, that Mr. Chase has been telling us for some years that a lot of these wells were plugged with telephone poles and that one day they might shoot up in the air. So I'm a little disappointed that we're not going to have that kind of exciting experience. But on the other side, it's wonderful to have Elwood Mesa kind of made pure, if you will, by removing these hazardous wells. So thank you. Let me just read the proclamation for the California Department of Conservation Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources for service to the citizens of Goleta. Whereas the Elwood Mesa Sperling Preserve was once the site of extensive oil and gas production, and whereas the California Department of Conservation, Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, DOGGR, identified three historic wells, Doty 4, Doty 5, and Elwood 1, on the Elwood Mesa Open Space Sperling Preserve, which lacked surface plugging to prevent a surface hazard and public nuisance, and whereas DOGGR, through the hazardous and idle Deserted Well Abatement Fund program, earmarked funding and issued a contract for the plugging and reabandonment of the above-mentioned wells as part of the Elwood Mesa Well Abandonment Program. And whereas the Elwood Mesa Well Abandonment Program was initiated on June 1, 2011, with DOGGR contractors completing all portions of the work on time and in compliance with all regulatory requirements, now, therefore, be it resolved that on this fourth day of October, 2011, the City Council of the City of Goleta does hereby proclaim its appreciation of the California Department of Conservation, Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, and its employees for protecting the environment and citizens of Goleta as part of the Elwood Mesa Well Abandonment Program, thus ensuring the health, safety, comfort, and quality of life of Goleta residents and visitors.
Madam Mayor, before we bring up our next guest, I want to put a plug in for someone that has been doing the day-to-day heavy lifting on this. It's one thing for me to come to the podium, talk about these agencies that we are working with and our relationship with them, and to thank them. But the heavy lifting here was actually done by Ann Wells. She's the person that made certain that the funding was there, and more importantly, that we were not trampling over the resources. Very integral to the success, not only for the city, but also for the state. And I think it's important to have that well known. So thank you.
Thank you, Ann. So we have a certificate for our past Assemblyman, Pedro Nava, if you could come up to the podium. And we certainly want to thank you for your role in making these things come about.
Thank you.
Let me just...
Nobody told me about this part. This is a surprise.
The City Council of the City of Goleta, California, presents this certificate of recognition to Assemblymember Pedro Nava for his dedication, leadership, and guidance as chair of the Assembly Committee on Environmental Safety and Toxic Materials. On September 30th, 2010, Assemblyman Member Nava conducted the first Oversight Committee hearing in the City of Goleta. The purpose of the hearing was to examine the long-term environmental hazards from oil and gas production along the California coast and in the Goleta Valley, located within the City of Goleta. Assemblymember Nava was instrumental in achieving the beach hazards removal project that benefits both the California coast and the Goleta community. The City Council of the City of Goleta proudly honors Assemblymember Pedro Nava for his service and leadership within our community. Approved on the 4th day of October, 2011.
Thank you. This is really very touching. I was an advocate for Goleta Cityhood when those conversations first started up a long time ago, because I always believed that this community was unique and that it deserved to be self-governed. And little did I ever suspect that I would find myself on this side of the podium being honored by you for basically doing my job. It was Mara Seves who contacted me and said, we've got a situation out here that I'd really like for you to take a look at and figure out whether or not you can help us. It was that ask and the support of the council that led to that. And I didn't realize it was the first hearing for the City of Goleta. And there were some skeptics there. I remember there were people who didn't think that it would happen, didn't believe that it would come together. And to those, I think we can say, once again, a partnership of a community, its local elected officials, and the skill and the tenacity of public servants working on behalf of the people of California and their respective departments have all come together to make a significant contribution to protect and conserve the resources of your community so that all of the people who come to Goleta can have a safe experience on your beaches. Thank you very, very much for this honor. I appreciate it.
Thank you for your good work. I just want to say that from the day of incorporation forward, protecting the Elwood Mesa and the beaches has been one of our priority undertakings, and all of you together have taken us up to another notch in those protection, and thank you very, very much. Would anybody else, Mr. Savis, would you like to say a few words?
Just a few words, Madam Mayor. I too want to thank those that came, Chief, for coming down, Acting Director, and Assemblyman Nava. I remember the meeting we had here, and we had a lot of hope, as Assemblyman mentioned, but it was like, okay, are we going to get the funding? Is it going to come together this time? Because we were almost there a few times before, and all of a sudden to see our staff come together with their smiles, this is happening. We're going to have boots on the ground cleaning this up. They're going to be here next week, and it started working. And you know, we still have a lot of work to do. But I think we've formed the nucleus of a great team to get the remaining structures that are left there and get them out and give us a pristine beach. And, you know, it is the only beach that Goleta has. And we have a great opportunity here. So personally, seeing this happen, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming down. And Assemblyman Arnaldo, for your leadership on this item, I will always be appreciative. So, thank you.
All right. Well, again, thank you. Thank you very much, very much. We really appreciate all that you've done. So I guess we'll move on then to the consent calendar B1.
B1, Amendment to the City of Goleta Salary Schedule and Classification Plan, Senior Assistant City Attorney.
I'm going to ask if anybody wants to pull any item. This is the one item. Does anybody want to pull it? If not, if we could have a motion.
Move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve item B1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carried. So let us now move to item C1. Madam Clerk?
C1, Expansion of Public Information Officer Schedule.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. You have before you an opportunity today to consider the expansion of one of our valued part-time positions, that of our public information officer. And you'll recall that back in June, as the council was reviewing and ultimately letting the contracts out for the large capital improvement project known as the San Jose Creek and Fish Passage and Capacity Improvement Project, there were comments that the council had at that time about the need to do really an outstanding job with the public information, the public engagement, and the support for those kinds of levels of public information. And so the council at that time requested that staff look into expanding the PIO's hours as opposed to always relying primarily on outside consultants to help with some of these larger capital projects. So the item before you today provides the council with that opportunity. What I'd like to do is just go over some details and then be available to you to answer questions. Michelle Green is also here if there's questions of a personnel-related nature or benefits, and Ms. Rivera is here if there's other financial questions about this this recommendation. You know, to date, we've had a part-time public information function, and generally speaking, 20 hours a week has been sufficient to meet our needs, even though they have grown over time, and we've had a number of successes with the PIO position, like the active engagement of our friends on the media side, the assistance with things like groundbreakings and ribbon cuttings, the writing, publishing, editing of our Monarch Press and Old Town Bulletin and various forms of communication with our public. But we're also, in looking ahead, on the cusp of a number of major public projects and initiatives, and I've outlined some of them. You all know what they are. Things like San Jose Creek and the Equal Fowler Road extensions, the Los Caneros Roundabout, the Las Vegas San Pedro Creek, the Hollister Bridge. And each of these capital projects carry with them usually some monies that are set aside on a one-time basis for public outreach and public information. But in addition, we have a number of other city initiatives that our PIO has been helpful in facilitating some of the public outreach on, things like the wildfire management plan that we're undertaking, as well as some of our emergency planning and green practices and other initiatives. And if they're not before you today, there'll certainly be plenty of initiatives before you in the coming years that are priorities for the council, which would benefit from some further public outreach. So under the proposal you have before you is taking a part-time position and expanding the hours up to 30 hours per week. Why 30? Well, in the first place, we need to spend some time determining exactly how much additional time is needed. And we can't necessarily put our finger on that, but we think on average somewhere in the 8 to 12 hours a week range is sufficient. So we've suggested going to about 30 hours a week. But also because the person who is fulfilling that role for us has indicated that she would not like to and would not wish to at this time work more than 30 hours a week. So we're working within that relationship. Under the proposed expansion, though, we would go from an unbenefited position, part-time, to a benefited position. And not only does that carry the implications of retirement costs and things like medical and other related insurance benefits, but it also means that the employee is entitled to sick leave and vacation leave and holiday pay. And we would recommend that those be prorated, as we've done with other part-time positions, so that there's an equitable amount of that benefit per the hours worked. So as we looked at this scenario, as well as other options, like working with our PIO to consider a contract relationship, not a part-time or a three-quarters time benefited position, we also started examining other factors. Once you move somebody into a benefited position, it's very difficult to take those benefits away. In fact, in some cases, you can't do that. And in any event, it's something we would work hard to avoid. And yet, the projection over the next 2, 3, 4 years of these large-scale projects that could use additional assistance have funding for those projects that are of a one-time nature. I know I'm preaching to the choir when I tell you once again, we work hard to avoid having the council and staff make decisions of an ongoing basis using one-time funds. And we've preached that for years, and the council's been good to try and hold true to that. So we struggled somewhat with the recommendation before you. But one of the things that was clear and one of the factors you might consider as you make a decision today is that we know that one way or another we're going to need to spend these dollars. It's not really a question of whether we have a commitment to greater public outreach or whether we have a commitment to funding that outreach, more the mechanism with which you do it. If the council chooses to move in the direction outlined in the report, we anticipate that there would be an impact, a difference in cost of over $40,000 a year, probably around $43,000 a year. How much of that cost is funded through the general plan? The general fund. In other words, how much of on an ongoing basis the general fund would need to contribute in addition to what it's contributing today, we can't really say with confidence. Because what we would be doing is allowing the PIO to start billing time against these various projects. And until we get through at least a 6 to 12 month period, it would be difficult for us to say with any confidence how much billable time counted against the general fund. What we have done is given an estimate of that, and we believe that something probably in the range of about $10,000 a year would be needed of additional general fund support if you were to expand the PIO position to the 30 hours. The rest of the funding would come from these various projects, which could include grant monies, CIP, other special funds, and over time would probably vary on a year-to-year basis. That really concludes most of my remarks. We did explore a couple of alternatives outside of moving to an additional benefited position, and they just weren't quite as palatable as we had desired. In other words, I think the cons outweighed the pros of saving some money, but I'd be happy to expand on that further if the council desires that. Otherwise, staff is available to answer any of your questions.
Any comments, Mr. Easton?
I don't have any questions. I don't have any questions, but I will make a comment or two. I would note, just to perhaps not dispense, but recognize the financial aspect that the managers dwelt on, that when the position goes to 100%, many of these costs will already be there, so we won't be seeing that significant an increase. And I don't think there's any question about it. Everybody except the applicant or the current PIO would like to see this position be 100%. And as soon as possible, I hope that will happen because the creativity, the enthusiasm, the commitment
just outstanding and impressive. And I'm looking forward to working with her next year in particular.
Okay. Mr. Sanders?
Thank you. I think the discussion today really is of the needs of the position and not talking about an individual needs or individual performance. When we came on council, this was a benefited three-quarter time position. So we are not creating something new here. Okay, we chose to make it a part-time with a management reorganization and made it part-time because there was some savings. What's new here today is that we have the ability now to return it to the three-quarter time position, but charge back to projects so it doesn't come out where it was previously 100% general fund. Now it's going to be a percentage only. It's not a new concept. We have many positions within the organization that are funded outside of the general fund. We talked about the part maintenance worker that actually comes, I think, out of the fuel or tax fund. So there are other mechanisms that government has used to fund positions to assist us and not have to take it out of the general fund. I am concerned, though, about the discussion of changing a benefit structure, because that sets a precedent. You know, the incumbent, they said, well, I won't take the insurance for 2 years. Well, what if for some reason tomorrow she decides, I can't take this job anymore, I need a new job, and we'll call somebody else in now and get the jobs. Oh, by the way, that position's been, the insurance has been foregoed for 2 years because we can't afford it. I mean, we already have a personnel policy that speaks to what a three-quarter time employee would receive. And I think we need to stick to that, not change it, because it may affect other employees that are also three-quarter time. So I'd be in favor of moving this forward as a fully benefited three-quarter time position. And I do that with knowing that's an increased cost, but with the comfort knowing that the increase is going to be offset, especially now with the San Jose Creek. It's going to be paid through other funding, so it's not going to impact our general plan. Right now, our general plan, I'm falling down.
My fault.
A manager's general plan. The general fund, you know, right now it's $10,000. Could be a little more, could be a little less. But I can see a need for the position to go three-quarter time, not only because of the San Jose Creek, but there are other things that we could be doing that we're not doing now, like fully vetting out social media with our Facebook as another method of communicating with our constituents as to what we're doing, and also use it as a two-way conversation tool so they could tell us how we can do our job better.
I would just like to say that I agree with what you're saying regarding the benefits, and I had a conversation with Mr. Singer about this. I am very uncomfortable with us establishing this position, regardless of the voluntary, for this individual voluntarily giving up the health benefits, to establish it as somehow different in category from our other regular employees. I'm not comfortable with that either. So, I also recognize that if we include the health benefit, then that is going to be a bigger impact on the general fund. Ms. Brody?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I support the idea of moving this employee to a three-quarter, 30-hour position, and I'll tell you why. I think the community and public outreach is critical. Every single session, and I'll talk about that later when we do our report, but every session that I went to for the League of Cities conference that we just attended, they spoke about the importance of a success to a city is the outreach. And I would hope that having someone that's working internally instead of hiring somebody, a firm contracting out, someone that lives here, knows our area, would be a better outreach to a community. I would also hope that that maybe that this position would also be able to help with if we decide to have another committee or commission. There's recreation, there's other things that we, and I'm wondering if this position would be this, I know all the extra committees that we would like to have, it takes time, it takes away staff time. And I know that could be a problem, but would this position be available? Would she be able to help in that regards to having, assisting with committees if we chose to initiate a couple more committees? Is that?
Madam Mayor, members of the council, I think any time you enlarge the total capacity of the organization, it gives us greater tools and options as to making assignments. Mm-hmm. The person who holds our PIO position, Valerie Kushneroff, has incredible skills and is grounded in a lot of activities in the community, and I'm sure would be willing to explore, if her time is expanded, how she might also be available to us to take on additional projects. I wouldn't want to suggest today what those could or might be without obviously some further discussion with her and direction from the council on what your priorities are.
Thank you.
Any other comments from council members? Would anybody like to make a motion?
I would certainly make a motion that we direct staff to implement the PIO function as a three-quarter time or 30-hour per week employee. And I would ask Mr. Singer what the date would be, or do I need to include a date on the motion?
Madam Mayor, members of the council, we would be able to effectuate that change with our next payroll cycle.
Then my motion would be effective the next payroll cycle, that the position would become three-quarter time.
It's been moved and seconded. Comments?
My only comment would be that the motion needs to include that it would include all benefits prorated at three-quarter time, since we're changing the staff recommendation.
I'm not sure if health benefits can be prorated again. Okay.
Yes, they can, because they're paid in cash if you don't take the benefit. And if you do take the benefit, then you just make up the difference in your own pay.
Okay.
I don't know, and I'll ask council, I don't know that the – we're not changing the personnel policy. And I think the personnel policy speaks to the benefits given to a three-quarter time employee. And Ms. Green, may I go to you on that one?
Mayor and council members, to clarify, in our policies and past practices with other three-quarter positions, we have always provided benefits at the prorated level, the three-quarter level, and that includes the vacation, sick leave, floating holiday, and other holiday benefits, the health, dental, and vision allowance, and anything of that nature that can be prorated. So what you're proposing is consistent with what we've done in the past.
Is it embedded in our personnel policy?
Yes, in our personnel rules, where we talk about benefits and what employees that are full-time or part-time receive.
Okay, then I'd be happy to amend the motion to just emphasize the fact that we are providing the benefits that are given to a three-quarter time employee.
Seconder agrees.
Okay, is there further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carried. And now. And,
Madam Mayor, just to let you know, in terms of any budget implications, those would come back to you with the first quarter budget amendment process.
Thank you. So let's now move to council comments. League of Cities Annual Conference. Tell me about it.
Well, Madam Mayor, I'll be happy to start off. I attended a number of seminars that were given, and but I had two that I would say that I found most interesting. One dealt with retirement, and it spoke more specifically about PERS and also a private sector component in that regard. But I found it informative nonetheless, and some of the far-reaching impacts of the current system and why there is such strong concern in the future for maintaining that which we have, and some methods by which things could be changed that would ensure that long-term retirements would be available to everyone in the future. So it was, I think it was a provocative session and one that I would have hoped that, that more people had attended, although it was reasonably well attended. But I listened to a number of comments by people that certainly have concerns, and it certainly seems to be the consensus that there's been many changes throughout the state, and it's expected that there will be continuing to be many changes, and by that, lesser benefits with a two-tier program being very, very commonly adopted throughout the state for both general employees and for safety employees. So I found that very, very interesting. Another interesting seminar was dealing with contracting and using nonprofits for service delivery. And it was interesting to me because, in essence, they were talking about the model that's been adopted by this city since its incorporation. And I think we've been able to weather the storm in our economy as well as we have, because we do have a number of private contracts that provide public services. And we certainly use a great many nonprofits to provide services to our community with our Active Park, our community center, and our cultural center at the Historical Society at Rancho La Patera. And those are three examples that in talking with my colleagues at these things, they were pretty impressed by, because they pay out of their general fund for all those services. And those are services that are commonly provided by communities. So they were really interested in how we happen to have what we have. But nonetheless, it was interesting in the comments that were made, and so I'll just stick with those two that, although I attended other sessions, I felt those were really the most that I got the most out of for the sessions that I attended.
Mr. Savis?
Thank you. Apologies for walking out, but I forgot my notes. I, too, enjoyed my time in San Francisco, and I thought the conference itself, for the most part, was had some good presentations. There were a couple where I thought weren't so good, but that's how it goes. I did attend one on city finance, a lot of discussion on state budget, a lot of talk about you know, issues that are now going to come before us, especially with COPS funding some of the lawsuits that are out there that can affect how public finances is how we handle public financing. And big discussion on fees versus taxes. And so there was, and there's a lot more on the city, League of Cities website from the speakers on that. Attended one on roundabouts, and quite an education on that. In that there is a presenter from the city of Davis who has a number of roundabouts. And one of the biggest issues that they have is educating the public on how to go through a roundabout. And if you recall, we had the discussion here not too long ago with the one there at Los Caneros and Carriel. And but the presentation was awesome. The diagrams they use, the types of roundabouts that are put in place. But the consistent message was that the roundabouts were really there to reduce the speed. That's the bottom line.
I'm sorry, really?
Reduce the speed of the traffic on the roadways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, issues like, you know, first end of the roundabout has a right-of-way to that roundabout. And you have to yield to the person in the roundabout. Talked about bicyclists. Well, the experienced bicyclists can go through it very well because they will own the roundabout when they enter it. It's the inexperienced bicyclists, you know, and that will then use the pedestrian crosswalks and then to get across the roundabout and go and get to the other side. But public education was the biggest tool, so as we move forward with our roundabouts, I hope that our staff would really work on the public education piece of that. And now that we've increased our PIO's time, I think we've got another job for her, is to get that public education component out there. And the only other one I wanted to comment on was the section on public sector employee compensation is actually taught by the city manager for the city of Stockton. Is that right? You know, he threw some things out there. In fact, he told those in attendance, there may be colleagues of mine in the audience, and this may be blasphemous, but you're going to have to hear this. And because things are changing on how the public sector compensation is handled. And so that was really, really informative, and I look forward to using that as we carry our duties in the future. So it was well done. And also got to fly out of the airport for the first time, our new airport. What a great experience. That airport commission did a great job putting that thing together. So those are my comments.
Okay. Mr. Easton.
Well, Council Member Sebi had help going through the new airport.
What?
I helped him through that new
airport. Oh, you helped him?
I, too, attended the League of Cities. I, too, had two favorite sessions. One was on Smart Grid, which is the oncoming proposals by electric utilities to put very small transmitters on electric meters. So, one, they don't have to read the meter. That saves them some money. And, two, what is not usually a part of the discussion is just how much information they get by being able to tell when and how electricity is used, not just in your house, but in all the houses of the jurisdiction that they're serving. It fit right into the presentation that was made by the White House representative who talked about data, and our ability to use data is beginning to make some major changes in the kind of decisions we make and how we get the information to make those decisions. So it really was useful. I attended it because I had heard that lurking in the bushes are all kinds of people that are frightened of this proposal to have radios attached to their houses. I'm going to have eight radios attached to my house because that's where all the meters are for all of the Kellogg Ranch. But this is the emission therefrom is something like 1/70th of what you get from that thing you carry around and put next to your head called a cell phone. So it really isn't a great problem, and as with so many things, people are fearful of what they don't understand. And this whole process led me to understand the smart grid and what an incredibly intelligent way it will be to manage electricity use and understand how we generate and use electricity in the most efficient manner possible. The other session was on council protocols and ethical decision-making. I didn't think the ethical decision-making was all that I might have hoped for, but the two jurisdictions that were described that had adopted protocols, and this is germane to us because we'll be going through this exercise, benefited from them substantially in one particular case because they had just gone through the painful experience of having two members of the council indicted and convicted of legal improprieties. And not having protocols, not having rules of the ball game, yes, we all understand what's ethical and what's appropriate, but it just takes one and nobody calling them on it and having no rules, no anything, and things can go downhill. In this particular case, they went downhill pretty far. So I'm looking forward to that exercise, not so much because I like rules, but because it's, well, I think a poet put it very well, good fences make good neighbors, and if you know where you belong, you can be very comfortable there. So both sessions were really worthwhile. The session on Twitter and Facebook, I won't describe.
Ms. Brody?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Well, I paved the way to the airport. I was there way ahead of you guys at 5:30. And it was a pleasure flying out of there, except for being a little bit overweight on my luggage. I'll learn next time not to do that. It's all right. I took care of it. I went to several sessions that I really enjoyed. I'll highlight a few. The first one that I attended was Approaches to Immigrant Integration. And several community leaders spoke on what they did in their communities to build support relationship between foreign-born and native-born populations, and how they recruited public engagement and provided services to the citizens. And Redwood City spoke on, they were up first, a representative from Redwood City, and they talked about how they're the first of two California cities launching what they're calling Welcoming America Initiative. And its efforts to improve understanding and strengthen relationships between longer-term residents and recent immigrants. What they really emphasized was the importance of the collaboration with a lot of stakeholders, and that could be our youth, our children, families, city leaders, county, school districts, university, healthcare organizations, and other community-based organizations. That is really important to form a collaboration. And they talked about their strategies, talked about how important it is to send out positive messaging. And by that, they talked about having art activities or having cultural events. So it's working with the community in a non-threatening atmosphere is something they were trying to highlight. Then Cupertino, they have what they're doing is called One Block at a Time. And so they're working with neighborhoods to work on common issues. They identify a leader in the community and the neighborhood and talk about what's going on in that community, that neighborhood, that's an issue. And then they start off by having block parties. And I didn't know, I don't know if we can do that here or not, but they'd said if they had 50% of people agree on this street to close the street and have a block party, then that's all it takes is 50%. I don't know what our rules are here in the city of Goleta, but when you have block parties and you include everybody, you have people sign up and then they identify people that can become leaders. They also offered citizenship classes at the senior center for people that wanting to get their citizenship. They expressed that it's really important to get people interested by finding a mutual need. What is a concern or mutual need, and building a relationship with the city and the community, and it's all based around trust. Understanding language issues, and they said this is one thing that you need to take the time to get right. Make sure that you have, you know, that you're getting things translated, that you use media like ethnic media, and also don't forget your faith-based organizations to work with them, and have lots of cultural celebrations with food and music. That's critical to building that relationship. So I found that one really something I really enjoyed. Then I also went to storm drain costs. Well, that was something Mr. Singer recommended I go to, and it was good. I learned a lot. They talk mainly about requirements required by the and rules by the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. So they talked a lot about long-term financial plan for the drain, for storm drain costs, and the sources of funding. They went into many different ways that you can fund that, and I could share that more in detail if anybody's interested. I also went to protocols, so I won't touch on that. I think the one thing that I did hear from that was that it's really important to have a facilitator, which I think we decided we were going to do, and make sure that he or she is the one in charge of the meeting. And so I got that. And then I went to strategic roundabouts, too. And I think Councilmember Aceves covered that pretty well. I did hear, though, from that meeting that it's when you are having a single lane seems to be safer for pedestrians and bicycles, single lane roundabout versus a multi-lane. And that when you have that separation between the cars and the bicyclists, so for the bicyclist that feels comfortable moving in and traveling with the flow, that's an option, but the others that may not feel that comfortable, like children or people that are just beginning to ride a bike, that they have that separation, that there's another area, path, that they can ride their bike on. So that was addressed. And I couldn't emphasize enough the engagement of the community, and they talked about visual simulation, and that's something that I think we'll be able to do. And educating drivers after the installation roundabout. It's critical. And they don't have really any data on how much safer it is yet on pedestrian safety or bicycle safety, but they said that, you know, they will have that probably by next year. And but, you know, the benefit is that moving cars slowly. They're going to be traveling at least 15 miles per hour or 20 miles per hour. Okay, the last thing I think I wanted to share was the Beacon Awards that I went to. The Beacon Awards recognizes and celebrates California cities and counties that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and energy and adopt policies and programs to address climate change and promotes sustainability. We all shared different ideas of how different cities and counties have been recognized, and Santa Barbara Mayor Helene Schneider was there, and they received an award for their the airport, which is a green building, and also something she called the automatic reservation system for city cars. I'm not quite sure, she didn't really go into how that works, but it helped them identify that they didn't need as many city cars as they thought they did. So that might be something we might be able to look into, maybe as the Beacon Awards. I have all kinds of information, and I have all handouts, and I have gone over with staff a few of the things that I went to, and I'd be happy to hand out any of my handouts that I have. I enjoyed it. It was great. And the networking, I think, is really critical.
Well, I had a very quiet time at home. let's see. We have the Ordinance Committee. Standing Committee report? That's you two?
The Ordinance Committee met again on the RV and oversized vehicle parking issue gave substantial direction to staff, who have assured us that they have enough to be able to come up with a with an ordinance that can be considered by the by council. Councilmember Bennett was particularly insistent that we keep it simple and we keep it straightforward and not try to complicate it any more than is absolutely necessary. And I think that made that rang true with everybody there. We did not have anyone there from the RV community, which concerns me slightly. So when this comes to council, we can probably expect that we will have a number of people there who own substantially sized RVs that will have some concerns with this and where they're going to be able to put them. And that's going to be one of the issues to be dealt with.
Okay. Mr. Bennett, you got anything?
Yeah, I would just expand on it. And just one small portion, I also attended another session at League of Cities dealing with large vehicles that was sponsored, which was most informative. But one of the points that was made there is that the Good Sam Club, for example, did get involved in the process of their adoption of a ordinance. And so it was suggested that to be proactive, make sure that they get invited and are being made aware of it. You're going forward with this consideration. So they don't get blindsided, you don't get blindsided, and that they can participate openly with the process. So the only other thing that I would say is that this is not the end-all ordinance. The ordinance, as Mayor Pro Tem Easton mentioned, is I think, concise and relatively simple. And the idea is to get us going. This is a good starting point. We're going to learn from it. We're going to have an opportunity to test its effectiveness and the impacts on our community. And then at a later date, we can then review those things that we find work, or maybe some things that occurred that as a result of the adoption of the ordinance that need to be corrected. But we can do that off in the future. We don't need to deal or anticipate, at least that was my thought in the process. At this stage, let's get something adopted, let's go forward, and then let's work on it and make it as palatable to our community as we possibly can.
Thank you. Mr. Singer.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have a couple of items. I'll start with some reflection on my time up at the conference as well. I, too, went to the protocol session, and I think, not to repeat the comments that were made, but one of the things that I heard that especially seemed pertinent and critical was the idea of consensus building, and that the council have that opportunity, and why I think a facilitator is a good idea, because it provides the forum to let you really build consensus around what you want those protocols to be. Although I did find something interesting, a couple of the comments were that a number of times protocols will also apply to the other bodies, like in our case, the Planning Commission or DRB. But if it's important that you build consensus, it seems kind of awkward that you're building consensus around protocols that they're having to apply. So I haven't quite figured out how you work that out. Do they also have to sit down and talk about it, for example? I also went to a kind of a technology and public, you know, public participation session, and it's just fascinating to me how much the means of engagement with communities is changing. The methods, and I've talked to some of you about this, the methods in which our residents and citizens are getting information has changed distinctly and in just a relatively short period of time. Your action today to expand the PIO position will go a long way in letting us try and be ahead of that curve, or at least somewhere in the ballpark of trying to keep up to speed with all of the kinds of changes that are going on in the media and public engagement world. And then I also went to the public employee pay and benefit session that Councilmember Aceves spoke of. Thank goodness we don't have some of the problems that Stockton has gone through. But there was certainly some important opportunities to learn from them and the one other city that was there. You know, sometimes as important as going to these education sessions is, as Councilmember Perotti talked about, is the networking or going through the expo and hearing from the consultants and the businesses and the companies that are out there doing things with cities and for communities. In that regard, I'll just let you know we have a meeting in a week or two to meet with a kind of a new upstart company that was founded actually by a city manager and staff up in Menlo Park that is creating a web-based communication tool for neighborhoods, but one that the city also has some influence over and some access to. And I'll certainly look forward to telling you more about it if it's something that we think is worthwhile to pursue. The nice thing is it's free. And so saying yes is just a matter of whether it makes sense for Goleta and whether it's something that we have the staff capacity to put resources to. But then once again, that would be a PIO function largely. And so I think we now have some additional time we can throw at that. 110%, really. But before we're done with this meeting, none of you mentioned the fact that we also got to meet Carlos Santana, and that was pretty cool.
We got what?
We got to meet Carlos Santana.
Oh.
Sat down at the table in the restaurant right next to us. And thankfully, Roger immediately pointed him out. Two other things, though, I'd just like to bring up. The council has an opportunity on Monday to meet with your planning commission in a public meeting here in the council chambers. The planning commission, it's their regularly scheduled meeting at 6 o'clock, so they'll kind of act as the host, but we'll have all of you at the dais here together. The public is invited. It will be videotaped and aired live, as with all Planning Commission meetings. It's an opportunity to talk more about Goleta transportation projects, how they're funded, how they're achieved, how they relate to private development projects, and that whole subject area. And so I'm sure there'll be an opportunity for a lot of engagement and questions. The final thing that I had relates to a commitment that we made a number of months ago to bring back to you on October 18th the matter of the Fairview Gardens application and the payment that they owe the city. And we had targeted a date of October 18th to do that. Fairview Gardens has been meeting actively with Steve Chase, our planning director, and has been keeping him informed of the efforts that they have undertaken to resolve the issue with the city. And one of the things that we've learned, and I believe I communicated to you a while back, is they're undertaking a strategic plan and a financial business plan. And those go to their board actually on, I think, the 19th of October, just a day after we meet. And it would be appropriate to allow that to take place because that will give them some of the tools and the certainty, hopefully, that they need to then complete their negotiations with our staff, so that we can return to you in the month of November, hopefully, with some discussion on that item. So I wanted to bring that up here because we had promised it to you at your next meeting, and it really looks like probably we need about another 30 days, as long as council's amenable to that. We'll look forward to what I believe will be a very positive discussion, unlike the last one, because one of the things you'll be glad to hear is that the Gardens has been working actively with the county as well as local donors and professionals to help with kind of the restoration of their produce stand and produce sales. And as a result of that, might have some better business models ahead. And so we certainly want to allow them to take those steps forward before we parade that subject back before you.
Mr. Charles.
Thank you. I wanted to thank Council for your support on the item on today's agenda, as well as for welcoming Mo Hill to our office. I talked a little bit during his swearing in, but I just wanted to let you know that we've already assigned him a number of projects. He's jumped right in, and it's providing noticeable relief. We're able to get a couple of projects that have been stalled out moving again, and I think this is going to help a lot in addressing some of the things that have delayed for a period of time. Also attended the League of Cities conference, my opportunity to get my mandatory legal education requirements out of the way in a specifically municipal law setting with my my colleagues, but also appreciated the opportunity to interact with you outside of City Hall and discuss a number of these issues, and that was all beneficial. And I won't belabor it beyond that, other than to say that your next item is a closed session, and we do not have any speaker cards for that. And if you're ready, I'd be glad to announce that item.
Okay. Do you want to then lead us into closed session, please?
There's a need this afternoon for the City Council to meet in closed session on two items. One, conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9C with respect to the potential initiation of one matter of litigation. Also, public employee performance evaluation pursuant to Section 54957 with regard to city manager performance evaluation. No reportable action is anticipated.
Thank you. With that, council will adjourn to closed session.
Session tonight that there we won't be meeting.
Okay, that's probably a good idea. I see all the crowds just waiting to come in. There is no evening session.